Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of Guitar Radio Show. Today is a day that I've been really looking forward to. It's something that we've been planning since the end of last year, and I've been in talks with these wonderful folks over at my favorite guitar company. Everybody knows that I'm a Fender fanboy. We have with us the second executive vice president of Fender Products and Fender Musical Instruments, and honestly, a heck of a guitarist because I have seen him play. And he's been with Fender for 25 years. He has directed the company's flagship product line of electric guitars and basses through 8 divisions and 5 factories. With his team, he specializes in guiding new products, ideas from start to finish. And this is just the very tip of the iceberg, and we're going to talk about 2020. Folks, he also has a record out that came out in 2013 called Stolen Moments. Please welcome to Guitar Radio Show, Justin Norville. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Hey, thank you. I got to ask, my first question out of the box is, after reading your resume, do you sleep?
Here and there. You know, actually these days I have a new dog, so not too much these days. But I've learned to kind of maximize time. But it's not really work because I love music. I love guitar. I love making music, writing music, and then designing guitars. So it's like, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So as they say,
that is really true. It is absolutely true for sure. And it's invigorating to get up and go to work every day because it doesn't feel like
100%.
Work. Yeah.
For sure. My wife actually will say sometimes I'll come home from work and I'll pick up the guitar. She's like, you still want to pick up the guitar? Like after like work, it's like, yeah, I do. So, I mean, it's like after all these years, after all this time, I mean, the guitar is, it's inspirational, confounding, mm-hmm. frustrating. It's everything rolled into one, and it never really gets old.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Yeah.
There's always another hill to climb.
Yeah, it's. I look at the fretboard to me, and it's still a black hole. It's
like, yeah, exactly. Especially add effects pedals and things like that to
yeah.
the mix, and you can really get
yeah,
into it.
For sure. So you grew up in Washington.
Yeah, I grew up in the Baltimore, Washington area, and I mean, I remember my dad played a little guitar. I had Fender picks were one of my first like memories of seeing like a brand name, I guess, of something. So early on, they had a great record collection. So I was listening to all the classic rock stuff right out of the gate from a very young age. And, eventually was in a bunch of bands, played drums, played guitar, played bass. As a drummer, everybody leaves their gear at your house. So you get to noodle on the guitar, you get to noodle on the bass because it's the drums are the thing that doesn't move. So in time, I kind of switched to guitar full time and, just ended up coming out to Arizona State, went to college here. I met there, was in a bunch of bands and kind of found out Fender had just moved from California. So I ended up getting a day job at Fender while my band was destined for greatness. It was just a matter of time. But in time, kind of things inverted and the job really grabbed me and the band, we didn't break, we broke up, so it was, but I still do the music thing. I still am inspired by it. I'm still always recording and haunted by riffs that I've come up with and everything. And I think that's really important because we have to view the guitar as a tool. And it's really, designing guitars is cool, but you have to think about what someone's going to do with it. And is it going to help them in the process and on their journey? Is it, can you make a better playing, better new sounds, easier playing so the creativity can come out? Like, what are the problems you're solving? And that's kind of what we try to work on while staying true to the history. But like, you want to be historic, but you still want to move forward. So it's kind of finding that balance.
Well, that's kind of why I keep coming back to this company. And, I don't know if you know this or not. I have over 15 Fender guitars in my
nice.
Possession, and I'm already looking at others, and I can't wait for, I'm a lefty.
Yeah.
So you guys have plenty of lefty options, which is fantastic for me. Mm-hmm. And they're just amazing tools. And the thing and everybody, I think a lot of people say this, the thing about the Strat is no two Strats are exactly alike. They all have their own personality. They only have their own characteristics. They're like people. So you pick one up and you go, yeah, this is the one. And you pick another one up and you go, I can do this with this one. And I can do this with this one. It's kind of wild.
And all through time, whether it's materials, even if they're the same materials, I mean, a guitar is a system. So it's really the relationship of the tremolo system with the bridge block and the springs and the pickups. It's not just the pickups you're hearing. Mm-hmm. It's like everything. It's really, you know, rosewood or maple, big headstock, little heads, all of it. They're tiny, tiny nuances, but those nuances are what make the guitar have a voice and be so expressive. It's just, you know, tiny bends of your finger and the way that your vibrato is. It's like, yeah. And Fenders have always had that sonic transparency where you can hear, you know, if there's a guitar hero, you can hear their style immediately.
Yes.
You know, that's David Gilmour, that's Stevie Ray Vaughan, that's, you know, Ritchie Blackmore, it's like, you know, Billy Corgan. It's a Strat, but it's also definitely them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something else.
Absolutely. I totally agree. So this must have been just an incredible dream job for you all along.
Yeah, I started out, you know, in various entry-level positions in the company, but in time kind of worked my way. I was in parts, and in the parts sales department and service, you learn everything, how, you know, what ingredients went into every recipe for the last 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got into product design, I was lucky enough that some real industry experts were, and, you know, Hall of Famers, basically guys like Dan Smith, were really well known in the industry, that were able to be my mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And they really took me under their wing and, you know, taught me everything I didn't know, and, you know, and just kind of showed me how it was done. And, you know, and I've always surrounded myself with people smarter than myself and that had, you know, a lot of knowledge of history and everything. One thing that's interesting about Fender is you think about it as a historic company because it's 70 years old, but since the beginning, it's always been about moving forward. So even though you can look at it and go, well, Strats have been around forever, Tellys have been around forever, but if you think, you know, say 50, 51, when the Esquire, Nocaster, Broadcaster, Telecaster thing's happening, the 51 P-Bass, the P-Bass comes out, then all of a sudden the Strat comes out in 54, Jazzmaster in 58, Jaguar 62, Mustang 65, I'm not even getting into amps, the 59 Bassman, and all this. So it's like, it never stopped, and Leo kind of never stopped moving forward. So the idea of just reissuing or just kind of holding the wheel steady and keeping things in their place has never really been an option for us, because the charter is forward. So, and it's interesting though, because like you're saying, a Strat is a, you know, there is a definite recipe and something to, you know, there's magic in those recipes.
Oh yeah.
But you could still mess with the recipe a little bit and try to do some cool new things. And then you could try to do some really avant-garde things too, because in the mid 60s, there was a lot of bizarro kind of, you know, innovation or R&D happening in the CBS era. You know, things like the Maverick, and there's the Starcaster, the Bronco, the Swinger, all these different designs.
Right.
And so we play with it. We're very serious, but we're also kind of not too serious. It's, you know, and we really have an opportunity to kind of make sure that we're honoring the past, that we're firmly in the present, but that we're also doing stuff to say, where's guitar going? Like, what's the future of guitar? And we've tried stuff. Not all of it works. You know, there's a lot of stuff we try that never makes it out into the public, but there's a lot of stuff that we try and it doesn't always work, but we're, you know, I think people appreciate that we're reaching and trying, trying to, some new stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, not to get too esoteric, but I will, there's also, I think there's a lot about intention too. When you're building an instrument and the people that are building the instrument, even if it's in an assembly line format, when those people are vested, and I know a lot of people that work at Fender and, you know, in factories and so, and the people that work at Fender are very vested in what they do, and they want to deliver. It's not just, oh, I got to do these necks today. Oh, I got to put these necks on these bodies today. It's not that. There is this intention behind the instrument. And then when you pick up the instrument, that carries over to me.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, it's like every single guitar that comes off the line. I mean, when you look at Hendrix at Woodstock, that was not some custom shop guitar or whatever that didn't exist at the time. That was an off the rack
at Manny's.
You know? And what's crazy is we're using the same machine and the same tool to stamp out some of the parts on a guitar you got today. It's what Jimi Hendrix, you know, used back then. And it's really something to behold. And we always say that, you know, every guitar that comes off the line, that could be used, that guitar could be put into a store, could be bought, taken home by someone that writes the next Smells Like Teen Spirit or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you never know. Like, so each instrument that we make that we send out into the world could be a really special instrument, and not only just to someone personally, but, you know, we say that we make art so people can make their art, which is their music. And so that's kind of our charter. And I think that's, you know, it's heavy, but it's like, it's so fulfilling, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, so let's jump into the gear. In December, I did a blog on the Ultra when the Ultra hit the streets. It hit the streets, and it came out in November, and I finally got to play one around December. And I was really blown away in the fact that, okay, here's a guitar that's capturing the best of both worlds. It's got that historic look. It does all the things that a Strat can do, but much, much more. And to me, and if you go and read my blog, what I felt like was, this is a guitar that is useful to any guitarist for any genre of music.
Yeah.
I mean, it is wide.
And I think that that's interesting, because I think genre more and more is kind of fragmenting away, and people do all kinds of stuff now, and it's not as specialized as it used to be. So having something that could really be that kind of Swiss Army knife instrument. And, you know, really the Ultra, one of the big things about that guitar was trying to have the guitar get out of the way. So you don't get, you know, you don't have this, you know, great unconscious guitar playing moment. And then as you slide up the neck, you hit the end of the neck heel and it kind of brings you back to reality. Or, you know, the neck shape is a little fat and your fingers are getting a little fatigued, or the frets aren't, you know, tall enough or whatever. So, I mean, all of those things were taken on with, you know, the charter in mind of, like, let's make this guitar so effortless and easy playing, but beautifully designed and in line with what Fender has been and, you know, will be. And, you know, it's we don't take it lightly messing with the body shape, which we did on these, but we kind of did it more on the back than on the front. But really took the race car kind of aesthetic, and we're like, if this is, you know, if you want the super vintage guitar, we have our American Original series. If you want your kind of yesterday and today thing, you got American Pro. But if you want like the high performance, you know, most forward leaning iteration of what Fender is, it's, you know, it's the Ultra, which should be, you know, fast and furious. And so that's kind of what we worked with when we did
the guitars. And the cool thing is, you can do it, and you can do it all with that instrument. What kind of blew me away. There was no, you know, and finally, you guys nailed the noiseless pickup.
Yeah, that's been 15 years or so.
Let me tell you, there's
always a trade-off with. There's dummy coils people use that takes off a lot of high end and reduces output. There's stacked humbuckers that don't really fully sound like a single coil. I mean, we've gone through so many different types of designs, so many different materials, samarium cobalt noise, like magnets and all this stuff. And this iteration I really feel is by far, you know, that real, you get all the expressiveness and all the kind of soul that you can get out of a single coil pickup.
Yeah.
Without the hum. And like, I mean, that's been something that people, that's been a thing that people have been trying to crack for 50 years.
Yeah. I mean, I have some really early iterations of the Fender Noiseless that just were kind of like, almost feels like there's a blanket over the guitar kind of a thing, you know? And now, then I picked up this Ultra and I was just like, are you kidding me? This is incredible. This is amazing. And the Telecaster too, just absolutely stupendous. And I got to tell you, the Texas T finish, good Lord. Good.
And that's a crazy one, because if you really like, depending on how it's lit, it can look brown, it can look black, it can look green, it can look gold.
Copper, so it can be copper.
Yeah. 100%, yes.
Yeah.
It was really trying to innovate from all sides, even just aesthetically. And the pickguard looks different, because some have a gold anodized pickguard and some have the
silver. Yeah.
That changes the color of the guitar too.
Yeah, I like the silver. That was a nice touch for sure. Yeah, really excellent. Really excellent. Let's jump over to Parallel Universe.
Yeah.
This is Parallel Universe Volume 2. Is this going to roll out the same way as it did last time? So one guitar a month?
Yes.
And how many will be produced of each?
It's around 500 of each.
Okay.
I mean, of each version that we're coming out.
Okay.
And I mean, those are kind of much more like a collectible kind of, you know, if someone's got one of everything, you know, this is something unique. Someone looking for a unique sound, unique voice, unique look, whatever.
Yeah.
And this allows us to kind of play on history, but try to find not just kind of an oddity, but like a real useful instrument within that format. Mm-hmm. So to, you know, we've got, you know, Stratocasters with Jazzmaster trims and Jazzmaster pickups. We've got Telecasters with bound headstocks, three humbuckers and a Bigsby. And then we did bring back the Maverick, which is a weird guitar that kind of probably only made a few of back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an interesting one, because you can tell from the CBS era, they probably had too many 12-string necks laying around. Someone was like, what are we going to do with these? And someone doweled the headstocks and said, let's make 6 strings out of them.
Right.
And then those body shapes, like the Maverick and the Swinger from back in that era, you can tell that those are just bodies that have had different pieces cut out to just create new shapes.
Yeah.
So it was kind of necessity is the mother of invention back then, because they were probably trying to alleviate some, you know, extra parts they had laying around, but it became something that was cool. And then by its rareness, it becomes something super interesting, you know, and that all of a sudden it's written about in books and photographed and stuff like that. So it's fun to do that, but then to do it in a modern way where we're not just reissuing that old guitar. We're like what would we do differently? And so, you know, and sonically all these instruments are completely different. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's three words, the Uptown Strat. Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, the mahogany body and the blonde finish.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That thing is crazy, man. I love it. So I was super thrilled to see, the Acoustasonic Strat hit the ground. And right after, as that was happening, my favorite guitar store in Houston announced that the Telecaster Acoustasonic was, there was some Lefties coming out.
Yes.
So will we see Lefties of the Strat version?
So I mean, the Tele is the first one with the Lefty. It'll probably be, I would say it'll probably be next year to get the Lefty on the Strat. As you know, as a Lefty, I'm actually a Lefty, but I grew up in a house that had a righty guitar in it, so I learned how to play righty.
Smart man.
But I could sympathize as a Lefty in other parts of my life. Yeah, I mean, the work to make a lefty, it's not just mirrored. It's like everything is...
No, the CNC's got to get changed. You got to reprogram.
100%.
Yeah.
All parts got to get made, et cetera. So, but yeah, we definitely... It's an innovative enough tool and something cool enough. We had to create a lefty version of that. And the Strat's cool because it leans a little bit more on the electric side. So you've got your acoustic sounds like the Tele. The Tele has a couple electric sounds, but this... Strat goes a little bit more, digs in a little bit more, a little bit dirtier, fuller electric sound. I think we did a video at the launch with Tyler Bryant and Daniel Donato in the studio, kind of shooting out, and they start acoustic and quickly go electric, and then they start one-upping each other. And it just, it's pretty like, you know, if you closed your eyes and weren't looking at that guitar, you wouldn't think that it was an acoustic anything.
Oh, it was blistering. It was amazing. Yeah. Folks, if you go to guitarradioshow.com and you look at the show notes for this episode, you will see that video. I will have that posted there. So, folks, you can see that. Yeah, man, I can't wait. So I will definitely be speaking to Jim over at Southpaw in Houston and let him know to put me on the list for that when that comes out next year. So my daughter is a guitar player, and she's a lefty as well. And so we share guitars a lot. And she's a ukulele player. Me, I don't have a clue what's going on with ukulele.
Yeah.
But when she saw a Jazzmaster uke, she nearly lost her mind. She squealed. So how cool is that? A Telecaster, a Strat, and a Jazzmaster ukulele? For real?
Yeah, ukuleles have been really having a resurgence for the last 5 years, and we've been doing ukes. You know, I think with our California BG heritage, it's kind of worked out for us and we like it, but we were like, what can we do a lot of acoustic electric ukuleles as well. We have artists like Billie Eilish, etc., playing them on stage, and we were like, well, what could we bring to this party that's, you know, not just what everybody else is doing? And some of the ideas, you know, what if we, you know, redressed some ukuleles in, you know, the iconic Fender formats, you know. And the first one I think we did was the Butterscotch Blonde Telecaster uke with the black pickguard.
That's great.
Just like, people were going nuts over it. I mean, we're right, our office is here, we're right on Sunset Boulevard, we're right around a bunch of studios, we have artists coming in all the time, and people were just flipping out over these. And we were kind of, you know, I think we were thinking, I don't know, do we do this, do we not do this? And people were just, it was so you know, just kind of overwhelming, you know, from you know, everybody that came into contact with these things, like, oh my God, you got to do these, you know. So we were just like, yeah. And then we decided to make a whole family out of them. And I think it's, it came out great. And we're all kind of, we all have our bets on which one we think is going to do the best, you know. And because so you got your Jazzmaster fans, your Strat fans. And,
sure.
So the jury's still out, but we're kind of, you know, we got a pool going. It's
yeah.
Gonna be awesome.
So two huge surprises this year, and one in particular that I was really, really excited about, is the Fender Lead Series.
Yes.
And now that's going to be part of the Player Series?
Yeah, it's part of our entry-level series, Player. And the Lead exists for a couple reasons. First off, it's just as time goes by, you know, everybody wanted the 50s stuff. And then you get into the 60s and maybe before 65, pre-CBS was a thing. And then, like, in time, the 70s stuff became cool. And then, you know, now, like, the 80s is kind of cool again as well. And aesthetically and tonally, as far as what these instruments were, I've always liked the Lead. I've always thought it was cool, especially in, like, the trans red with the black guard.
Yeah.
Double cut. It's super cool looking guitars.
Yeah.
And it always kind of secretly wanted one. At the same time, we were just thinking about, like, well, what else could we do, you know, that we could do something different. We were having artists come to us and say, I want something that's not a Strat, not a Tele, that's different. And some people were also asking for some smaller bodies, smaller designs, etc. Mm-hmm. And that the Lead was kind of a thing that was like, well, we were thinking about doing this anyway, and it kind of ticks the boxes of what these people are asking for.
Right.
So we're kind of like, it's, you know, it's serving a new need, but it's also kind of bringing back something historic that people, you know, think is cool. And obviously it's not a super high-end guitar, you know, even from back in the day or whatever, on like the used market. So we kind of just wanted to put it out kind of in that more playful kind of thrash it out punk rock band kind of vibe. You know, I remember going back all the way to some of the early ads. You had like Steve Morse was one of like the main endorsements of those.
And the dude from Loverboy, what was his name?
Yeah.
Paul.
I remember Mike Reno was a singer.
Right, Mike Reno was a Paul something.
I mean, the Loverboy, that was so pre-Steinberger, I guess they were playing later on. So, it's again, like, there's so much to mine in our history, but then we take it and we go, well, is it relevant today? What would we change about it if we wanted to bring it back out, and who's it for? And, you know, I think that it's really resonated in kind of the indie rock community. It's resonated with a lot of our female artist population, et cetera. So, we're really excited to bring a new family of guitars out.
Yeah, so
those with the HM Strats we also did, which are another.
I was going to talk about that when the first picture got leaked of that when it came out and everybody was talking about it. I was like, well, this is a prank.
Yeah,
It's funny
because I think that if you really. If we're really honest and self-aware, I would say that was a moment where Fender was a little chasing and not being as true to itself or what a Strat is or should be, because that it was a little bit out of favor.
Yeah, but you're adjusting to the market too.
Yeah. So like doing, you know, that's what people were buying and that's what people were wanting. And we were just starting to see a lot of the 80s stuff coming back. We actually did that logo on t-shirts and we're selling those, and it just felt like it would be interesting if we, you know, we had a couple prototypes of them and we showed them to some people, and it was just like
they lost their minds.
And they had like they have the little stripe underneath where it says Strat that matches the body color, and it's just it's so 80s, like the colors, the green and like the kind of
The pink.
Everything, it's awesome. So it's like everything kind of comes around again.
Yeah.
Like, from a tone
perspective. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Completely. Yeah. Yeah. But I totally agree with you. So with the Fender lead, to go back to that just for a second, will we see lefties of that or no?
I mean, we're always looking to do lefties, and I don't know that would be one that would be super hard to do. So I think that's a possibility for sure.
Yeah, that's one I would purchase that without a doubt. Yeah. So in a continuing sea of digital amp offerings, to me it seems like you guys have really kind of figured this out. One of the cool things that I've noticed about Fender, particularly in the last 5 to 10 years, is you guys have made a really concerted effort to interweave education with your products, your product line, your conversation with the consumer and the player. And the whole idea of I can actually draw a line between, honestly, the new Mustang LT50 and Fender Play, you know, because you're kind of saying, okay, this is what a Champ sounds like. This is what a Princeton Reverb sounds like. This is what a Super Reverb sounds like. So should you continue on with your career or turn this into a career, you'll know what sound really does it for you, and then you can level up.
Yeah. 100%. It's really about kind of creating an entire ecosystem and just being there to foster new players, pay people to stick with it. You know, I don't think guitar playing has an issue with people not thinking it's cool. Everybody thinks guitar is cool, but people think it's hard. People that do start, the quitting ratio is very high. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having things like play really are an investment in the continued movement and popularity of the guitar, and all of our products kind of speak to that as well. So, and trying to just modernize as we go. So, I mean, having apps, whether it's Tune and Tone, the Tone works with our new, our Mustangs and Mustang GTXs that we just came out with, and kind of melds the digital space with the hardware space. And, you know, I just think that from music, musical history, songwriting, like all of the things that encompass what it means to be a musician and guitar player, we just want to help foster that and create an environment in a community, because, you know, there's no little league for guitar. You know, there are a lot of things. If you're in orchestral, like there's school programs still. If you're in sports, there are leagues you join. You kind of buy a guitar and you take it home.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you going to jam along with your, you know, your Spotify or your Apple Music? Are you going to take lessons at the local store? Like, there's a million ways to do it.
Right.
You're going to get in a band and start playing with people. You're going to record on GarageBand. And so trying to build a sense of community and a sense of support within, you know, the guitar universe, I think is really important.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And you guys have done it so well and really, really thoughtfully. I like that. It's really, really great. And, you know, it's funny. I played the Tone Master recently. I hadn't had a chance to. And I was, honestly, I was sitting with a friend, and we were in one of those little ISO rooms, and we plugged in. And at first, I didn't even realize what he had plugged me into. And he said, just try this out. And I was like, man, it sounds great. It's, you know, I says, wow, is that, you know, what is that? And he says, it's a Tone Master. I get the hell out of here. Honestly, I was completely convinced that was a deluxe reverb.
Yeah, we've done some of the blind tests, and like people with really golden ears like are hard pressed to tell the difference. You know, I mean, it's that instead of taking the processing power, the quad core processing power that people use to do 1,000 things well, what if we did a few things great?
Yeah.
You know, and that's really, I mean, the processing just to do the 12 seconds of convolution reverb,
right,
and that long decay,
right,
that you can get, that is what makes that sound so good. And the attenuator on the back, so you can get the thing to break up and sounds like a cranked amp. The impulse responses that sound like a 57 or a Royer. It's a simple thing, but it is a simple thing done really well. And elegant simplicity has always been a Fender hallmark. You know, it's never been amps with 100 knobs. It's like, just make it very intuitive and easy to use. Make it sound great where you can't get a bad sound.
Well, the cool thing too was you weren't trying to sound like somebody else either. You were just saying, we're going to sound like a Fender amp.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a benchmark sound. That's our sonic signature. And I think we have a sound that we're known for. We have something that we can rely on where, you know, we're not emulating other sounds.
Right.
So I think that's something. And in our R&D department, when we're designing these amps, you know, the people that did the 65 deluxe reverb reissue are next door to the person that's doing the algorithms on the Tone Master. So
right,
you're not just a digital company trying to make a tube amp. You literally have the tube amp people over there going, there's something here. You got to deal, do this, do that, you
right,
know, almost, you know, so like that interdependency and that play between those two teams is awesome.
Yeah. That is so cool. First and foremost, take me through your rig. What's your go-to guitar?
Well, I have a 63 Jazzmaster. That's one of my favorites. But I'd say right now I have a Telecaster that was a 52 vintage hot rod, but it has a body on it that was made. It's old reclaimed redwood. It was used on like a Gold Rush train bridge in Northern California or something.
That's cool.
But we've done some of these guitars over the years, like made out of old barns or whatever. And this was like an extra piece of wood body that we had laying around that we were prototyping.
Right.
It's very odd. It's got a 59 bridge humbucker in the neck. Nice. And it's got an Alnico 3 like broadcaster era a single coil in the bridge, and that telly, it's got this control plate reversed.
Yeah.
And that's my main Telecaster.
Love it.
And I played through Princeton when I was playing out all the time. I had an old Bandmaster piggyback combo, and I have a pretty big pedal board of all kinds of stuff that rotates pretty regularly.
That's cool. So,
but yeah, I'm definitely lean towards the alt rock, you know, a little shoegazy, a little like heavy on the delays and the reverbs, mm-hmm. and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of, you know, definitely a child of the 90s.
Very cool. Sure. Yeah. All right, last but not least, and then I'm going to let you go. You work with so many different artists and in producing, like I know you did the Jimmy Page, you were involved with the Jimmy Page guitar and all that stuff. Give us a quick story that someone might not know about, like the lay people, including myself, might not know about, that was an interesting moment for you meeting one of those artists.
Oh, wow. I mean, there've really been so many. Jimmy Page, I mean, I would say that just his... super humble, super excited, and like when we went to the factory, he came out from England, came to the factory, and literally sat in a room and was painting for days on end, because when we did the custom shop guitars, he painted part of the dragon on all of them.
Right.
And literally worked, you know, 13-hour days every day, and we were like, you know, at dinner listening on his phone, the music that inspired him and his favorite songs and all of that stuff. He was telling stories, but he went through the factory and, you know, was in the metal shop. We're talking about, like, you know, how we're still using the same old equipment. He was looking at the old tools, and I was showing him stuff that was from, you know, this tool's from 1957, this one's from 1963, you know, because a lot of times people think, well, because Fender was sold to CBS and then it was bought back, and people, they think that we just own the name, and it's like, no, we've got the stuff, the mojo, and it's all there. And he was just so jazzed, and there are pictures of him filming with his phone, like watching the punch press go up and down, stamping out pick guards and everything, and he was just so jazzed and so inspired, and it was like literally like a kid in a candy store. And it was just awesome to see that someone who's had a career like he's had could still be inspired by what we're doing and the way we're doing it. I think it goes back to what you were saying about how the people that work here are imbued with the kind of righteous mission, I guess I would say, of, you know, of knowing what we're doing and making these musical instruments that people are going to use. But I mean, really, art is so... fantastic, and these tools that we make for people, I mean, everybody holds them with reverence. You know, you see Corgan on signature models, James Burton, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, you know, Elvis Costello, Thurston Moore and Lee Rinaldo, Jay Maskus. I mean, it's just been Jim Root from Slipknot.
Yeah.
It's just been a wild
ride. And now
Tom Morello.
Yeah.
It's everybody's got a different approach to the instrument. Everybody's got a different, what they feel is important, what they want, what they're trying to do, and what gear they have, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's, I guess a funny story about an artist, I guess, if I go back, is one of the first Crossroads concerts. I was in the back area, and Bill Murray was going to be the MC for Clapton. And they decided, I guess Bill Murray at the last moment decided he wanted to play the song Gloria from the 60s.
Right.
But he didn't know it. And Eric Clapton like ran with him back into this room where I was. And there's just a couple of us in there. And he's showing him the chords, which is just D, A, and E. And, you know, they're just sitting there going back and forth. And you have one of the greatest guitarists of all time showing someone who's kind of just like being able to make these chords, but kind of just encouraging them, like, come on, we got this. And they started jamming it and they started getting it, like, okay, let's do it. And then they just ran out there and took it to the stage and made it happen.
That's fantastic. Cool. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, that's a great place to wrap it up.
Awesome.
I cannot thank you enough. Keep doing what you're doing. It's fantastic. I just love what you guys do over there.
Thanks so much. It's been an honor, and we'll get some more lefties going, man.
Right on. That's fantastic.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. All right. You have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Bye-bye now.
Right. Check out Guitar Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.